The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Bob Costas today. Bob Costas. He is back on HBO. It's great to have Bob on board. Had Bob on many times through the years. Back on the radio side. I think we've had him on once or twice in this little slice of heaven that we've been doing since 2011. So Bob Costas today. And then Michael Fabiano, presented by DraftKings. Appreciate DraftKings and their support of Fabs. All things fantasy football. And there's some really good questions. We're getting that time of year with fantasy football. We have to start looking at, like, if you have Dak Prescott and he doesn't play championship weekend because the Cowboys have a big lead, what does Fabs think about that strategy? And some tight ends that are coming up out of the wilderness and plenty to get to with Fabs on the fantasy football front. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. The Iron Man, Jared Nielsen, is captaining the ship today. So if anything bad happens, it's all on him. No, I'm just kidding. Nothing bad's going to happen. There's so much to go off of today. I watched the Suns game last night. I love watching Peyton and Eli. I was sitting there just kind of chuckling to myself, like, they've got me hooked here for all of Al Michaels and the first couple of questions with Phil Mickelson. And I haven't missed much of anything with the game. And then I flipped over to the other side and was like, I think I'm going to go back to Peyton and Eli. It's really fascinating to see how ESPN has come up with something for all the criticism that there is of media and all the criticism that there is of ESPN, and God knows there's enough reason to criticize and just say, why do they do this? Why do they do that? Peyton and Eli has turned out to be one of the smarter decisions that they've made. It's pretty cool to just hang out, kind of, to be sitting in, you feel like, your chair with a couple of great, all-time great, well, one all-time great quarterback, and Eli, of course, with his tremendous run with the Giants. And to just kind of eavesdrop. You know, Phil Mickelson comes in here and he's Eddie Haskell. He just kind of has this look about him like, I'm going to stir it up. I'm going to stir it up without even saying I'm going to stir it up. And then he does. And it's funny. And Al Michaels was pretty good. Okay. I'm not expecting, it's a live game. Like, they're talking to Al Michaels when the 49ers intercepted and did a pick six. And they just had to read and react. It was great. It was just, it made my night pleasurable. And then I got in on the ASU basketball game, and that was like watching dental surgery at points. They're just not good yet. They're trying to figure it out. Marcus Bagley had a knee injury. So it was a busy sports night all the way around here doing my thing. I don't often go with what my mailbag is all about. I don't go often off of comments sections and all that because it's usually, I don't know, the same 10, 15 people that are bitching about something. But when I get it outside of the usual dudes and dudettes, and it is something that just kind of makes me shake my head, I don't know what to tell you if you're an Arizona State football fan. I really don't, because this has nothing to do with the coach. It has everything to do with, look, I get it. You want to spend your dispensable income at a football game? But gosh almighty, it just is never enough for you. We don't want to go out at 2 p.m. on a Saturday. Who scheduled that game? Why aren't we playing at night? And just complain. And why do we have to be on the Pac-12 network? This is what I've been saying to you. Please, please try to understand that this is not that hard. Okay? Arizona State against Arizona. People here in Phoenix and in Tucson and across the state that went to either school, it's big to them. It doesn't mean much to the rest of the country. Accept it. This is not Alabama against Auburn. You don't want to hear it? Be good. No, actually, be great. Be brilliant. Okay? Don't be average or below average every single year since the Rose Bowl team. And then you won't be sentenced to the Pac-12 network at 2 p.m. on a Saturday on Thanksgiving weekend when there's nobody around because they're all out shopping. You are filling airtime. That's all that's happening with this. Oh, that's really insulting. Oh, you're just picking on the fans. No, you guys are bitching about this, and it's really simple. This is why I've said repeatedly, I'm sick of El Paso. I don't really want to go to Vegas. I don't want to go to San Diego, and I grew up there. Go to big bowl games. Don't be just mediocre like it's been for all these years, and then you won't have to go to 2 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon on Pac-12 Network. It's just not that hard. You'll go to ABC in prime time. You'll go to Fox in prime time. They'll make it a big deal. But when U of A has won this many games in the last 2 years, and Arizona State's been mediocre at best, and then it's, oh, I can't believe we're being disrespected, and I'm like, why are we after 2 o'clock? That's really inconvenient. You know, it's going to clog up our whole day. And what are you? What do you want? What do you want? I feel bad for some of these players. I've heard that there's some players that are like looking up into the stands and having stuff said and yelled and hurled at them. And that just shouldn't happen. The Texas players the other day got booed running out onto the field to do warm-ups by their own fans against Kansas, and they probably lost. Okay, I talk to people in other teams. Talk to players that either were at places or still at places. And fan behavior, it's just like, out of the top, over the top. And when my mailbag is not, you know, if ASU beats Oregon State and they beat the U of A, and if Utah loses to Oregon, and, you know, to play it out where they actually, in spite of a season that's been like this, and even though I still think Herm walks at the end of the season, even though they have this many verbals and we're less than 30 days away from letter of intent day, even though they're under investigation by the NCAA, I don't know. I can make a point that there's things that are of interest. I'm going to Oregon State. I don't know many people that like going to Corvallis in November. I know the fan base bitches about going to Corvallis every year. I only have to play Oregon State late in the season. Why does the conference do this to us? Because you're just filling time. I thought Wilner put it really well yesterday. The Arizona State-Oregon State game is going to have something riding on it because it follows the Utah-Oregon game. Utah-Oregon will play 3 hours earlier. These two teams are in second place within their conference, so they're going to know some things that are happening within their divisions, I should say. I don't know. I would like it to be about on the field. I really would. But it becomes this just, I cringe when I open up my emails or DMs and it's just nothing but disrespect by the conference and all this stuff. It's just like, are you guys delusional? You've done nothing since 97. You've done nothing. So, and part of it is U of A is just not good. They're better. I think next week's actually going to be an entertaining territorial cup. If you were entertained by last year's territorial cup, clearly you're an ASU fan, not a U of A fan. I like close games. I went to Chandler Hamilton the other night. Close game. Don't care who wins. Don't care who wins ASU, U of A. Don't care. I want it to be a close game. It would be something fun. You know, Kyler Murray does not need to play this week against Seattle, and neither does DeAndre Hopkins. It's like watching the Rams last night. The season is too damn long. It just is. The 49ers can't beat anybody at home but the Rams. Last two times they played the Rams, they beat them. Everybody else, they lose. And so you just got to manage and get through this. If they don't play him this week, don't even put him on the plane. Of course they will. I get it. But there's no reason for panic in the streets here in middle of November. The smart guys, smart players I've talked to, I just got to be healthy for the stretch run after Thanksgiving. That's what it's been. That's what I've heard. That's not been anything new in the NFL. Guys just want to make sure they're ready to go in the last 4 or 5 games of the season, and the Cardinals are right there. And watching the Suns last night, you know, DeAndre Ayton moved well, played great, had missed 5 games. They're just rolling through another stretch of playing bad teams. I mean, Minnesota's not a good team. They should win. They've won 9 in a row. All right, Bob Costas is next, and then Michael Fabiano. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, let's take a minute here to talk about DraftKings. This is important, guys. The football season is rolling on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets if your team wins this week, thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. Really happy to have them on board. Here's how to claim this offer. Sign up for a DraftKings Sportsbook account. Make your first-time deposit of $5 or more. Place a $5-plus wager on your football team, and if they win, you win $200 in free bets. It's that easy. Just go to dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Again, that's dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Act now. This offer won't be around forever, thanks to DraftKings. All right, as promised, Bob Costas is back. It's not like he ever went anywhere, but he has a new show on HBO that you need to check out, Back on the Record with Bob Costas. I wanted to have Bob on, the legendary sportscaster, for a few minutes to talk about that and just get caught up. I will one side story with Bob Costas many, many years ago when I was at KTAR. Bob gave me a half hour. We talked about all sorts of things, and he called me the very next day. And my phone rang at my desk, and it's Brad's Bob Costas. I want to apologize. I felt like I talked too much last night and didn't let you say anything. And I just was dumbfounded. Like, no, it was great. And he gave me his book at one time. So it's always good to catch up with someone who is into his craft like he is through the years. With that as an intro, what is the story with this new show? I can give it, but let's hear it from you.
Well, the story, Brad, is we're not reinventing anything. The title tells you that. Back on the Record. At the turn of the 21st century, for 7 or 8 years, I had a show called On the Record with Bob Costas on HBO. And I would have loved to have stayed with that indefinitely. But when the Baseball Network came along, they wanted me to be part of their programming. And at that time, the people that ran HBO said, you can't be in two cable places at once. We have to have cable exclusivity. And this was really a difficult choice because HBO is the gold standard in terms of quality. But the Major League Baseball Network was very appealing, doing games, doing historical pieces, doing interviews centered around baseball, which is the sport that I have the greatest affinity for. So it was a difficult choice, but I had to leave HBO. But now the landscape has changed. And HBO is perfectly okay with me continuing at the Baseball Network. Baseball Network was always okay with me being in both places. So I come back, and the show has all the same elements of On the Record. We used to do produced featured pieces on the Record, and we don't do that, at least we haven't, through the first four shows on the new program. I guess we're flexible enough to, if the situation calls for it, do that. But mostly it's long-form interviews, it's panel discussions, and it's extended commentaries by me, longer than I've ever had the liberty of doing before. Somewhere, the first four have all been somewhere between 4 and 6 minutes.
I go back on what you've done through the years, and I remember Costas Coast to Coast. Mm-hmm. This is when radio, there was no satellite, there was no Sirius, there was no cable, there was nothing. So it moves you from what you've done really well, where you would take a guest for an hour, sometimes 2 hours, And just say, okay, let's do this now at a platform where I can stretch and I'm not having somebody say, no, we're tied in with this media partner, you can't talk about that, or no, we have to go to break, or no, we need to break this up. It's pretty unfiltered, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are some time constraints here, but it's HBO. So the subject matter is not in any way constrained, and there are no commercials. So when we say we're doing an hour show, we're filling very often 58 minutes and 30 seconds. It's all content. When you mentioned Costas Coast to Coast, which ran for about a decade from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, I'm pleased by the feedback I continue to get. It isn't as much as it used to be, but people will still occasionally mention it. And like a lot of things, it's a matter of timing. What was the landscape at that time? All sports talk radio didn't even exist until the late 1980s. Now there are hundreds such stations, plus, like you say, Sirius and other options. And there was no Sunday night football, and there was no Sunday night baseball. And so a lot of stations that carried local teams didn't really have any programming on a Sunday night. We gave them 2 hours of solid sports programming with marquee names, for the most part. So we were on not just 300 stations, we were on most of the 50,000 watt stations that dominated their market and boomed out over multiple states. So if you started a show like that today, even if it was equally good, it couldn't make the same kind of imprint that that show made. Everything is a function not only of how good it is, but when did it happen and in what context did it happen? And I was just lucky that most of my career landed in a space of time where what I was interested in, what my sensibility was, aligned with a very large portion of what the audience wanted.
Yeah, it's interesting how here you are doing Back on the Record now, and you're able to stretch out, as we talked about, in a space where, let's just focus on baseball. You've said you're a Bull Durham guy. You know, you're not a Field of Dreams guy.
No, I like Field of Dreams, but if I was forced to pick one that comes closest to my view of baseball, Bull Durham would be it. And either way, I can't offend Kevin Costner because he's the star of both.
Yeah, there you go. But here in Arizona, you know, the highlight of the offseason so far is that Brent Strom has come in as the pitching coach. We have a dilapidated stadium. We have an owner that really wants to see a work stoppage, in my humble opinion. They're not committed to winning over here in Arizona. They're in the National League West where they have no shot. So I want to take this down a path of labor stoppage and what you see coming here in the offseason, because there are so many baseball fans, Bob, as you know full well, here with the Cactus League in the Valley and the Diamondbacks.
You know, people who are closer to it than I am, people who really cover it day to day, the Ken Rosenthals, the Jeff Passans, people like that. John Paul Morosi, there's kind of a feeling that if it's not certain, it's highly likely that there's going to be some kind of work stoppage. And December 2nd, which is coming up fast, is the date when something's going to happen one way or another. The current agreement expires on December 2nd. Now, as far as fans are concerned, they don't really care, even if it stops free agent signings and puts a halt to trades or whatever. They don't really care until spring training rolls around, and especially when scheduled opening day, when games start, rolls around. So they could go through a couple of months of haggling, and as long as they play ball when people expect baseball to be back, they'll be okay. But there are so many issues up in the air, and so many different ways to look at baseball's revenues, with gambling coming in now and the new television deals and the Players Association, even though players are well compensated, they want what they believe is a fair share of that. There are things on the table about the game itself, and the players and owners should see their interests there as coinciding. If the game is not pleasing as entertainment, as a lot of us who love the game are concerned that it's already moved in that direction, away from being the pleasing, leisurely pace that baseball always has toward its present plodding, lethargic pace, if they don't see their mutual interest in making adjustments that will remedy that problem, and if they hold out, if each holds out like this is a carrot, and here's the stick and the carrot in bargaining, instead of seeing it as something that really is best for the game and therefore best for all of them, you know, then we could be in for an even longer tussle there.
You know, they talk about wins above replacement to replace the current salary arbitration system, and fans are like, war, where are we at on this? And that came out over the weekend, and in emails today, fans are just disappointed. Like, I don't want to hear, as you said, we don't want to hear about this, but if this is what they're fighting over, does this make sense to you, Bob?
Well, I'm not sure it's the only thing they're fighting over, but war is one of the analytic tools. It's interesting. I want to see it. It's informative, but I don't think it's always definitive. Sometimes the guy who has the highest war in the league because of the position he plays or whatever calculus is involved, you just know, he's a good player. I can name 10 players who had better years than this guy did. So sometimes I'm going to date myself, but I said this on the Baseball Network once to Brian Kenny, who is kind of the leading analytics guy. He carries that banner for the network. And I said, you know, I'm going to quote Edwin Starr, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again. But that's a 1970s thing. So that kind of dates me.
It's Back on the Record with HBO, with Bob Costas. I want to go over to this book. I held up to you before we started the interview. Okay. So I've had this, it's an autographed copy from Bob, no less, in 2000.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? I mean, I don't know. You didn't charge me, but, you know, there it is. It's your writing. So I want
well,
to
sure that that should raise its value. I think it's available at, like, in the Amazon, you know, out of print bin for about $1.99, but that one's probably worth at least $3.99 now. Yeah.
My daughter works at Changing Hands. She's said it's worth 99 cents. I'm just kidding.
There you go.
This book, seriously here, you wrote it in 2000. Mm-hmm. Other than the numbers that are in this book, do you feel like this is mostly what you thought would happen when you penned this 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think it holds up pretty well. Yeah. I think the basic arguments hold up pretty well. And some people misinterpreted. I used certain numbers only as an example.
Right.
I didn't say that the salary cap should be $80 million or $150 million. I use those as examples. And as the revenue of the overall revenues of the sport grow, then those numbers should expand. So I think the premise, the basic fundamentals of what I put out there holds up pretty well.
Before I get you out of here, I want to talk about mental health in sports. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of it out here on our platforms and seeing a gravitation by the audience. I had Ivan Maisel on with his book a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. It's a terrific book. And others, you've been in this chair of Olympics and at the highest levels. And now people like Simone Biles and Michael Phelps and others. Bob, did we miss something back in the 80s, 90s, thousands? Executives didn't want us to talk about that. Do you see that as an emerging trend now where it is okay in mainstream to go down that path?
Yeah, I think it is. It's not confined to sports. In general, we're more open to talking about these issues that used to have a certain stigma attached to them or a reluctance from prominent people to acknowledge that they had those problems. I think that we're much more open and much more understanding about that. But I will say that I was never aware. I never encountered a situation, let's say in 1996 or 2000 around the Olympics or anything else, where I was aware that a person was struggling with mental health issues and some executive told me, don't address that. Mm. That never happened. But I think the reason it never happened is that people were reluctant to present that situation. You know, you might have said the person has personal issues or they've left this team for this reason or that, but they were not more forthcoming about what those issues were. And now that stigma, even though there's some blowback, Simone Biles got it, for example, some people calling her a quitter and whatnot. I think that generally speaking, the society is much more receptive and empathetic towards situations like that.
Before I get you out of here, then last question, in your new program, Back on the Record with HBO, mm-hmm. are there areas you want to go to that you've not stretched yourself and gone to before, or you just said, you know, I'm not there yet? Are there some new spots you want to go to?
I think really it's more the amount of time. You know, maybe I could have done a 90-second or 2-minute commentary occasionally during the Olympics, and occasionally, even though most of what I talked about at halftime and on the NFL, 99% of it was just whatever was happening that week in the NFL or something. But even if I broached a subject like CTE, which I did a few times on NBC, I didn't have the breadth of time to do it. HBO gives you both the breadth of time, and not only are they not putting up barriers in terms of subject matter, they're encouraging you to go to it as long as you do it with some sort of credibility and with the kind of quality that they expect on HBO. So again, I don't know that I'm reinventing anything, but I hope that I'm just doing the best possible job I'm capable of doing. And certainly HBO gives you the platform to do it.
Bob Costas, Back on the Record, HBO with Bob Costas. Good stuff there. We appreciate your time and your insight. Stay safe, Bob. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Good to talk with you again.
We're back with more after this time out. The football season rolls on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets. If your team wins this week, thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. Here's how to claim this offer. You sign up for a DraftKings Sportsbook account. That's easy. Make your first-time deposit of $5 or more. That's simple. Place a $5-plus wager on your football team, and if they win, you win $200 in free bets. That's right. Just go to dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Again, that's dkng.co/sports360. Act now. This offer won't be around forever. Time now, as always, Fabs is with us. Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, SiriusXM and SI.com, brought to you by DraftKings. The football season rolls on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets if your team wins this week, thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. We appreciate DraftKings and their support. All right, we have to start talking strategy here. And this is going to be a little bit insufferable because it involves the Cowboys.
I was going to say, where's the lead here?
Because the Cowboys are winning, I have to start looking at Dak Prescott and say, if it gets into the playoffs and I got to use Cooper Rush, Fabs, are we getting to that point? They're up 3.5, I believe, in the standings. Like, we have to start looking at Dak and CD and Zeke and all of that towards the postseason. What advice would you give those that have Cowboys because they're going to go to the playoffs?
Well, it's only them. I mean, the Cardinals have a better record than the Cowboys. I mean, there's teams out there that are that have, you know, at least the look of the fast track on going to the postseason. I mean, the only thing you can really do is, you know, make sure that you've handcuffed some of these top backs on the teams that appear to be going. But, you know, over the last like several years, the whole like resting your players thing, especially, you know, it had been, you know, in week 16. And now there's so many games that are important because of the way that the NFL builds the schedule. There's a lot of divisional games that are very important at the end of the year. So you don't see it as much, right? I mean, you're going to see it from time to time. I think it's probably too soon to worry about it at this point. Get to the playoffs first and see what happens. But I mean, it's always important to handcuff your top running backs. Most of the best handcuffs are already off the waiver wire at this point. And in terms of, you know, Dak Prescott missing maybe a week 17 game, which is now fantasy football championship week, I don't know that I see that happening. I mean, honestly, I really still feel like, you know, if these teams, even if they've clinched the postseason berth, you really want to go 2 weeks before the postseason without playing football. I think maybe that final week of the season, teams might rest some of their stars or at least limit them. But in week 17, I don't think that's going to be a huge problem at this point. And honestly, there's no elite team in the league. Like, there's nobody who's boat racing the rest of the league. There's nobody, right?
But I mean, they have a huge lead. They do have a huge lead.
They do. Right now they do. Sure. I mean, but you never know what could happen. And again, I don't think the Cowboys or any of these NFL teams are going to be resting players significantly in week 17. Week 18, yeah, I could maybe see that. Week 17, that's why we play the championship in week 17. There could be some exceptions to the rule. I'm not so concerned about it at this point. If you are, and say you have Dak Prescott, you look at the schedule, see if there's maybe a quarterback floating around the waiver wire who has a good matchup, or maybe your quarterback on your bench already has a good matchup, and then you're good to go. But there ain't much on the waiver wire in the leagues I'm in. I can tell you that right now. So.
Okay, so let me throw some quarterbacks at you because the mailbag is filled with quarterbacks. There's a really interesting running back I want to run by you in a bit, but let's go with quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo is just killing it here recently, and the 49ers are figuring it out on a lot of fronts. It was just Debo earlier in the year, but man, Garoppolo, has he got to be a guy you pick up?
There's only two teams off this week. Keep that in mind, right? So, and really only one of the quarterbacks is fantasy friendly, and that's Matthew Stafford, although he's been the exact opposite of that the last couple of weeks. So is he worth the ad? I mean, if you need a quarterback, I'd rather pick up Cam Newton, to be honest with you, if I had to choose between the two. But Jimmy G's playing good. They got the Jaguars this week, but which Jaguars defense do we see, right? The Jaguars, the defense has played really well against quarterbacks the last 2 weeks. Carson Wentz did nothing last week. In the previous week, Josh Allen did nothing. The Jaguars' Josh Allen did something. The Bills' Josh Allen did nothing. So, like, you know, and, you know, people talk about the Jags being an easy opponent. I mean, lately they haven't been, right? The defense has been playing much better. So I feel like Garoppolo is probably still limited to two QB leagues, but he's played well. I think the biggest storyline with Garoppolo playing well is that Trey Lance is not going to see the field while this happens.
No.
If Garoppolo continues to play well, Trey Lance is going to play in 2022. And so if you've been holding him this long, and I have him in a couple of leagues that are two QB leagues that I'm hoping for him to come to the forefront of that depth chart, I don't know that that's going to happen as long as Garoppolo is playing well, unless the Niners fall out of contention later in the season and then they can maybe play Lance late in the year. Right now, you're not going to see Trey Lance.
Give me some reasons on Mac Jones and Taylor Heinicke at this point in the season.
But boy, Mac looked good last week. Yeah. And I mean, Cleveland's defense is good. I mean, and it's not like he played, against a team that's giving it up every single week, right? He's got Atlanta this week. Here's the thing with Mac Jones on a Thursday night. And I hate this. I mean, Thursday night games are fun and they make the league a lot of money. But like, I always hate playing guys that I'm wishy-washy about on Thursday night because I hate going into a Sunday with a stinker already in my starting lineup. So the matchup's good. Atlanta's defense is no great shakes, right? If you're in a 2QB league, you obviously start them. But again, I mean, there's only two teams off this week, so I feel like you could do better than Mac Jones, although the matchup's pretty good.
Heinicke, where are you at on him?
Heinicke, like, I still can't believe Washington won last week, but I mean, I guess it's been a crazy, like, three-week stretch. And the quality of play in the NFL hasn't been great. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed that either. There's been a lot of blowouts. Right,
Mike. It's the midseason. It's the grind, and these people, like the Rams and Cardinals, are doing the absolutely right thing. It's like, I don't care if Kyler plays at Seattle; they have a bye after that.
Yep.
He'll been off a month to get healed up. This whole war of attrition is impacting fantasy like I've never seen it before.
But even think about it. Ravens Dolphins. That was a terrible game.
Yeah.
Seahawks-Packers, that was a terrible game.
Lions-Steelers,
right?
Terrible
game. There were like four blowouts this week.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. So I feel like the level of play is not as good in the NFL. There's still obviously great games. I mean, last night's game stunk, right? I mean, like the Niners boat raced the Rams. I mean, there wasn't even a game, really. It was another blowout. So in terms of Heinicke, though, he's a QB2 and a guy that I play when the matchup is right. This week it's Carolina. Which is, how ironic is that? Like, the NFL couldn't have written a better storyline. Cam Newton comes back and he's facing his old coach right out of the gate in his first start. So Heinicke is a QB2. He's not a guy that I would be streaming in a traditional one quarterback league unless I'm really hurting at the position.
He is the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, with SiriusXM, Fantasy Dirt, SI.com. He does great content, the Hall of Famer, with us every week, brought to you by DraftKings. We appreciate DraftKings and their support. I want to get over to a running back, and this is more scheduling. So last year, David Montgomery was someone that didn't do a whole lot early in the season. Late in the year, he was great. The Bears are in a space where he's just kind of hanging out over there. Fabs, are you in a space? I'm starting to look at my roster, and I need a running back. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to make a push because I'm doing really well. To go try and get David Montgomery. The team's got him, is not having a good season. Where are you at on David Montgomery? Because the Bears' schedule is not one that you look at and say, well, that's impossible for them.
Yeah. So they're like right in terms of like strength of schedule among running backs, they're kind of like right in the middle for the rest of the season. But Montgomery, when he came back last week, I mean, he was the guy.
Yep.
Right. I mean, he played the majority of the snaps in the backfield, got the majority of the touches in the backfield. So there's no question that he's the guy. Ravens this week, and the Ravens defense, like you think of Ravens defense, you're like, ooh, bad matchup. Not this year. They haven't been all that great this year. So Montgomery would be a guy that if you can get him now, I think you probably maybe passed your opportunity to get him on the cheap when he was hurt. But if you're looking to trade for running backs who have really good schedules down the stretch, or at least in the fantasy playoffs, I got a list for you right here. The Eagles have a really good schedule, but can you trust Miles Sanders, right? The Broncos have a really good schedule.
Eagles have all those guys. I don't trust any of them in Philadelphia.
Right. The Broncos have a really good schedule. So, like, you know, maybe you get Melvin Gordon on the cheap. He didn't have a great game last week. He got in the end zone, but that was it. DeAndre Swift has got a really good strength of schedule rest away in the playoffs, but he's going to cost you a lot. Elijah Mitchell's another guy. I mean, I like Elijah Mitchell. I wouldn't mind grabbing him. He saw a lot of carries last night. He didn't do much with him because the Rams' defense is tough. And Jeff Wilson Jr. has kind of emerged as like their third down kind of guy, their complimentary back. But Mitchell's the guy, and Shanahan loves him. I mean, Trey Sermon is so buried on the depth chart, it's ridiculous at this point. So those are a few guys that you can maybe try to acquire based on strength of schedule. But yeah, Brad, that's 100% important. Like, if you grab Montgomery in a trade before that stretch of games, like, it'd probably help you get to the championship, if not win it.
Fabs, what about tight ends? Hunter Henry. If I would have told you at the start of the season that Hunter Henry – was going to be a guy that was killing it, not just every so often, but every week. And I know we talked early in the year when there were injuries and everything about how the tight end position was really lacking. Hunter Henry, Fabs, what do you make out of him?
Yeah, I mean, he's like Gronk Jr. Okay, maybe not, but he's getting into the end zone a lot. And, you know, Jonnu Smith is a guy that a lot of folks thought would be, like, more prominently featured in the offense. And Jonnu, barely involved, right? They've been using Hunter Henry a lot. Mac Jones has a good rapport with him. And, you know, it's not like he's getting, like, a ton of volume like Dan Arnold in Jacksonville, who's a really good pickup, by the way, has been for the last couple of weeks. But, like, he's getting those important red zone opportunities, and Hunter Henry's been cashing in on them. So, like, at a thin position, like you said, I mean, he's a low-end tight end one, right? Kyle Pitts, what has happened with him? Yeah. Everyone drafted him to be the guy. He's had maybe two good games all year, two or three. That's it. I mean, Hunter Henry's been better lately. So you got to look at these things. And tight end, there are guys who are emerging. Tyler Conklin has been good. He's getting targets in the red zone. He had two touchdowns this past week. I mentioned Dan Arnold. All of a sudden, he's coming on. Pat Freiermuth, right? He had a bit of a stinker last week, but that was with Mason Rudolph. If Big Ben plays against the Chargers, I mean, Freiermuth's a really good play. Mm-hmm. So there are some improving. I mean, Cole Kmet, he's got the Ravens defense this week. The Ravens defense has given up a lot of points to tight ends, but I feel like it's a little skewed because they played Kelce and Waller this year. And I mean, both those guys scored over 24. Like, that's what they do on a regular basis, especially Kelce, maybe not so much Waller this year. But still, Cole Kmet is a guy that Justin Fields is looking to in the passing game a little bit more often. So, you know, those are some guys that you can look up on the waiver wire and go ahead and grab if you need help. But Hunter Henry has been he's been very good, and he's been a really good draft bargain because a lot of people drafted Jonnu ahead of him, thinking that Henry would be the second option at tight end, and that has not been the case.
Yeah, Troutman in New Orleans I'm looking at too a little bit.
Yeah, no, Troutman is a good play too this week. The Eagles are not good against tight ends. Troutman had, I think, five catches last week. So, and again, Trevor Siemian, you know, backup quarterback type of guy who's not going to, you know, take a ton of chances downfield. You know, you throw into that the short and intermediate passes, and that tight end position suddenly becomes valuable. And Troutman's been he's been getting more opportunities lately.
Okay, two other players. I'll get you out of here. Gesicki in Miami, getting questions about him.
Listen, when I write my columns, right, start them and sit them.
Yeah,
you're obviously looking at the matchups, but you're also looking at projected volume in terms of targets and touches. Right, he had seven targets. He didn't do anything with them, right? Whether or not they were bad targets, good targets, he dropped the pass here or there. Yeah, it was bad. I'm in a league, and somehow I still won. I don't know how the hell I did it. I started TJ Hockenson, who didn't score a point in five quarters.
Anything. He's been terrible.
And my flex was Gesicki. One of my flexes was Gesicki. I had zeros from two guys and still won. I don't know how the hell I did it. But honestly, what are your alternatives, though? Right? I mean, they got the Jets this week. Have you seen what the Jets have given up? I got it here because I've got my stardom and situm column that I'm, you know, currently writing right now. The Jets, like, this is bananas. Brad, they've given up an average of 43.8 points and 472 and a half total yards of offense in their last four games. Like, they should be excommunicated from the National Football League. Yeah. I don't follow college football. Who's the best college football team right now? Do you have any idea?
It would be Georgia.
Bring Georgia in. Yeah. Bring Georgia in. Yeah. They'll put up a better fight than the Jets. They stink. So, like, I mean, am I sitting Gesicki against the Jets? Like, hell no. And, I mean, tight end's a hard position to fill. So that's the thing with Gesicki, though. Yeah, and this is what he was last year, too, right? I mean, he's a guy who's like, he flash and boom, oh, my God, I love him. He's great. He'll have a good stretch. And then he falls off a cliff. And he fell right to the bottom of that cliff this past week against the Ravens. Who, by the way, were a pretty good matchup, at least based on the numbers.
All right, one other player, and I'll get you out of here. So In New England, Damian Harris gets hurt. Stevenson, where are you at on that situation?
So I don't know if Harris is going to play because it's a short week. So the Patriots may decide to rest him again because Stevenson was so good. If Stevenson plays, which I think he will, and be the starter, he's an RB2. I mean, bottom line, he's an RB2. I liked him last week. I like Brandon Bolden as well. Bolden didn't get as much burn. Why? Because the Patriots boat raced the Browns, so they didn't have to throw the ball. So a lot of it is game script, right? So if you think the Patriots are going to beat the Falcons this week, which, I mean, I would think so, but who the hell knows? The NFL is so unpredictable. But that's good for Stevenson. So if Damian Harris is out this week again, which I wouldn't be surprised if he were, I don't know. But if he is, Stevenson is a really good play, a really good play. And A.J. Dillon, same thing, really good play this week. Doesn't even matter who they're playing. They got Minnesota. Doesn't matter. Volume. Volume is king. And with Aaron Jones out for maybe a couple of weeks, I think he'll probably be back week 14 because the Packers have two games and then a bye. So they probably bring him back week 14. I mean, AJ Dillon for the next two games is going to be a monster. Like, he's going to be Derrick Henry light. He's going to be awesome.
Listen to you. He is the Hall of Famer fantasy football.
Hey, you didn't mention how did the Cowboys do last week? I forgot. What was it, 45-3? What was it again?
Oh, I don't know. I'm still caught up in the Yankee scores.
Get Danny White on my show, will you? Danny White, if you're listening,
weekly,
I love you. I adore
request.
You. I met you in SoFi. I need to get you
I'm
on my show.
I'm feeling the pressure. Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer. You can find him on SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt and SI.com. I will work on it. I will work on it. See you next week.
See you, pal.